Folks, I call February the 12th work session of Blue Valley County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with pledge allegiance followed by the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. And we're gonna have the constitutional officers' presentations tonight, and we're gonna begin with something very fond of my heart, number 19. That's my baseball number.
I don't know why I'm number 19.
But number 19, the treasurer, Ms. Lindhur.
Okay.
Do you want me to pull up your budget?
Please. In case anybody needs to. Okay. Just want to say, we've gone over this. There is no slush in it. It's bare bones. And hopefully, it will be sufficient to carry my office through. We've cut some things, you know, Eric and his staff, we've gone through and looked at pretty much everything here. And we have, you know, reduced some items. So, if anyone has any questions, I'll be glad to.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So, Ms. Lindhur's budget for fiscal year 20, the current fiscal year we're in, is $410,616. The county admin proposed budget for her office is $412,616. There's, I think, don't remember exactly, but I think it's a little bit in professional services and something else, but that's basically the extent of the increase in her budget. Like I said, we can go down and we can drill down into any line item, but, you know, as I said in my presentation, proposed budget presentation, most offices for the most part were pretty level in what they presented, if not some even went down a little bit. So, and it's, you know, we've gone through and done a lot of due diligence on looking department's budgets, and I don't think anyone, maybe without the exception of personnel, I don't think anyone in these budgets per se did not necessarily get everything that they need to operate day-to-day operationally, like I said. But personnel, that can be a different story.
Thank you. All right. I'm gonna tell you what. All right, so now we'll move down to 17, the Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Sheridan.
17. That's a different story.
Thank you, sir. In keeping with her presentation, I'll move right along. I never hesitate to tell you, I think I have a great staff. I know I have a great staff. I have four deputies in there. I've got three of them that are certified in the career development program. We've got one member of our staff that's working right now, you know, out of the area, but she's still got certified too. So we have four career certified commissioners of the revenue, deputy commissioners. One individual who's joined our staff is enrolled. She's taking classes and she'll get done in due time. It unfortunately is a 3-year process, but she'll be there by then. We did get recognized as one of, I think it was 27 commissioners of the revenue offices is fully accredited in Commonwealth of Virginia.
Out of how many?
Well, there are 123 if you count the cities, towns and counties, 93 counties, I believe. But, so we're proud of that. We did maintain our full continuity on both moves that we had, and that was out and in as we were fortunate enough to get new accommodations. We really appreciate that. Let me just say, remodel, that's probably a better word. Public Works has been helping us on a project that I felt real passionate about, which was increased physical security in our office to lend, in my opinion, considerably more protection to the Commissioner of Revenue staff should we have a reason to have a secure place. And they were able to make that happen, and we appreciate it a lot. I won't belabor it. We have transitioned entirely to an electronic interaction with the public. Now, we still do. Not everyone likes that electronic format. Turn in land use, turn in tax relief, turn in personal property, business personal property. But that opportunity is there. Many do. We are certainly not requiring it, but we encourage anybody that would want to do that. And we find, frankly, that more and more people are interested in doing that. The forms are all online and can be filled out electronically and faxed with the supporting documentation. Our budget, if you would, Mr. Dahl, thank you, sir. Without really belaboring it, there's a slight increase. It's we went down in a few areas. We went up. We went from 378 to 380. It's pretty anemic increase. It is almost entirely due to professional services. We've just seen an increase in new construction over the last really 18 months, but certainly the last 12. You know, if you follow cars, they really reporting where Fluvanna is and new house sales or just home sales in general. And so we had estimated about 75 houses, I believe, last year. We were estimating about 150 for this coming year. And I think that's going to be, that might be conservative based on the new subdivisions we've got across from Effort Baptist and then, of course, from the Lake Main Gate. Those are properties that are going to be, barring any really unforeseen economic bad news, I think you'll see those continue to build out. So the real growth, if there's any such thing as growth, is in the professional services. We took a reduction in ADP supplies, furniture and fixtures. I just felt like we could get by with what we got, a little less, frankly, money. We y'all helped us have good equipment. We occasionally will certainly update our IT stuff, but our IT staff, I've worked around the world in different places, and I've never worked with a better staff than Mr. Dahl has for information technology. Only two deep, but they do it all, and I've never asked them a question they couldn't answer.
And good.
Just that, I'm serious, they're just that good. But they keep us healthy in IT, so I won't belabor that. I'd certainly answer any questions you might have, but it's pretty consistent with what we had for this year, with the exception of what I anticipate will be more homes that we'll pick up, which is good for our tax base. The second page, that Mr. Dahl brought up, I should say, technically page four, speaks to the reassessment budget. No surprises there. It's exactly what we anticipated when we put the contract in place that says in 2021, you know, we do the reassessment that has every property visited, every property, you know, photographs taken, hopefully from all four sides as they can based on fencing and stuff like that. So that's progressing along. The weather this year has lent itself to them getting an early start. If you recall, what's effectively happening is they're visiting those properties. They usually stop in the January, February timeline, but they really haven't this time. So they'll probably be a little bit ahead of schedule, which means that they'll get all of the properties, I suspect, visited by the August time frame, do their work with respect to actual sales of properties, and then send out a notice to all the homeowners on or about the first part of September with an opportunity to revisit that with the assessor that looked at your property in early October. So that's nothing surprising there. Answer any questions you might have.
And just remember about the reassessment budget, yeah. Too. When I give my county administrator a proposed budget, reassessment was a big increase. But as I said, it wasn't because they increased our cost or you know, we have had increased contractual costs. It's just the way the contract falls fiscal year by fiscal year. So, I mean, the reassessment budget was an increase, but it's just the way that the dollars, yeah, and how properties,
right,
are being
where they're executed.
Yeah, and with what we had happen with when we didn't do it for 6 years, we don't want to have that happen.
Right. No. Oh, God, no. Well, no. Right now, y'all, I know Mr. Dahl's where, and of course, the finance department, that even with the reassessment in 19, we had about a little over 5% drop in our sales to assessment ratio that the state assigns. That's not necessarily good. It's good and bad. It means that we lose 5% of what we might have gotten from our utilities that impacts our composite index formula. But it also means that we're doing pretty well with the cost of housing. The housing market's doing well. What the complete picture is that utilities actually increased the total taxable value for the past year for 2019. So yeah, it was down 5%, but we were up just a little over 1.5%. So it comes in at about 3.5%. That we've figured, I believe, 98, Mr. Dahl, was it 98 or 99?
99.
Yeah. So we didn't get 99. Yep. We would have if the housing market would have been a little flatter, but you saw what Cars reported a couple of weeks ago about the housing market is up considerably over the last 12 months. Anyhow, the one thing I would mention to y'all, just to keep in the back of your mind, I know you are, that we will have a reassessment on January 1st of 2021, which is 9 months or 10 months from now, and that usually is beneficial to us in that I anticipate that we'll see we had about a 3.5% across the board an increase in real estate in 19. The folks in the east end of the county got a significantly larger increase than maybe the central or western part, but across the board, and we look at it as a total, about 3.5 to 4% increase. I think it'll probably be more than that based on the housing market right now. So that means that we will continue to be conservative in our revenue estimates, working with Mr. Dahl and his staff. But when we get to January, on that second half, that second 6 months, that hopefully, I suspect it's going to be higher than that this time. I suspect it'll be 5.5 to 6, maybe 6.5% increase. It's my guess. That can change with a large economic downturn or something, but it looks pretty doggone promising, the housing market in Fluvanna right now. My last slide, I just wanted to say again, thank you for consistent funding. Y'all have been able to, I think, because of good budgeting, keep us pretty doggone close to whole. Operationally and personnel, I know there's, I believe, a cost of living that's proposed. I, for one, would strongly encourage you to do that. I really like the idea of it being an across-the-board. Everybody gets if there's anything, everybody gets that percentage of increase and shares it equally. And then finally, it goes without saying, just constantly having the support from county staff and the team environment we work in. I've never worked in a better one, and this is my third county that I've worked with at the local level. But I'd entertain any questions that y'all might have. Thank you.
I know that Park Union has some Liberty Homes. Do you ever know how many homes they're going to put in that area? They come up mighty fast. And how many Liberty, I don't know if you call them developments or what, how many of them do we have in the county? And you have any idea what the cost is? Because affordable housing for us is a very crucial thing, and I guess we haven't even started even looking or even thinking about it. Because I think most of the homes is coming, and affordable is something that you really can't put your finger on it. But do you have any idea of how many Liberty homes those developments they have?
No, ma'am, I don't. I suspect I would have to, that planning would be in a better position, because anytime there's a proposed subdivision, or I would suspect that Ms. Miles and his staff may be in the best position to give us that information.
Right. Lake Monticello. Is it one in Kensville?
The
one in Van Shallow.
I talked about the panorama. Okay. They probably wonder why the driver's ed car goes through there all the
time.
I go through there and just to look and count. And They're not completely built out, but they're pretty doggone close.
Now, they're living in homes.
And they only had three, they're living.
Yes, ma'am.
And they only had three houses in it last year.
Well, and some of those properties too, and some of the, if it's a subdivision, they may have been approved a long time ago.
And it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them have been on the books as a subdivision, it's just whether they, you know, when they decide to build out.
Yeah, the building inspections department would have an idea of what's getting ready to come forward and what's being built. But I mean, from a subdivision standpoint, some of those could have been approved 5 years ago.
Have they started the one over next to Broken Island at all?
Mr. Miles?
No, Island Hill.
I forget what the name of it.
Island Hill. That's 49 miles, they haven't started.
You tax on each lot too, don't you?
Sir?
You tax on each lot?
Oh, yes, sir, absolutely, you know, the home sites. And that's why I think frankly, if things continue as they are with the economy, I would think 150 new homes this year is conservative.
We've had about 110 this last year in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
So you're talking about almost a 50% increase.
Yeah, the last 2 years we've had 121 and 18 and 119 in fiscal year 19.
And prior to that, we were trading at about 65, 70. Yeah. But if you turn the clock back to what we know was the case in 03, 04, I mean, we were building 450 houses a year.
Yeah, sure.
But I hope that as a board, we don't lose sight of the fact that we do have people who need to have affordable houses. And we can get carried away with $200,000 and $300,000 and $400,000 homes. And our people need to stay here. Some people can't work at the jobs that we provide here in Charlottesville and get those kinds of homes. So
what's an affordable house?
Affordable is usually, it's a moving target. It can be, what, 30% of your annual income?
Okay.
So that means that we're pricing a lot of our people.
That's what I'm wondering, what are we pricing this house for, to make them affordable?
That's one good thing where we've had the Habitat for Humanity. We've had a bunch of them.
Right. And that's good. Habitat and Food Valley and Louisa Housing. We do houses, but everybody doesn't want to live in a cookie cutter house. You know what I'm saying? They're small, and they're small for a beginning family that have little children. Once your child get to be a teenager, they don't fit into those little rooms. And that's been an advocate for me is that's, you know, make those houses a little bit larger, but they are built good, energy efficient. They're wonderful. But those are the only affordable. I mean, we just can't, you know, stay there. But that has nothing to do with you, Mel. But I guess we need to keep sight of.
Well, the nice thing, Mrs. Booker, we obviously have good, reasonable values for our property in the county, there's always good opportunities to get reasonable price property if someone's not interested in maybe the cookie cutter subdivision or something. So
I think that's one thing that the subdivision across from Everett. When that gets started.
Colonial Circle. Single family, multi-family, apartments. Yeah.
Multi-unit.
Multi-unit, yeah. Mm-hmm. That will help quite a bit.
Definitely.
All right, thank you, Mr. Sheridan.
Yes, sir.
Well, 33 and 34.
Right.
Sheriff Hess, you got
some
tough
acts. I will apologize to everyone. Mine is a little bit more lengthy.
Yeah, we know yours. You don't need
and, but I'm asking for things, and I think I have to talk about my needs and justify those needs. Yes, please. Basically, our mission statement and our following the way we've continued following the 21st century policing, we continue to do those examples, and like last year, we carried off of the county's logo there. We added to live, learn, play, work and play. We added we want a safe community too. expanding last year. We took on some new programs that have just, and some of them bled into this year. Child ID program was a collaboration between the Commonwealth Attorney, myself, and the Rotary Club of Levanna County. We all came together and sponsored the ID kits for the kids. And as you'll see in a few minutes, the Explorer Post, which was started in the high school by one of our resource officers, is doing really well. And we'll I have a slide on that in a minute, as well as the YOSA. So here's our Safe Exchange Zone. We finally got that up and running this year. I moved my space down to the bottom of the hill. We got room now for two cars parked side by side. They can exchange products that are sold over the internet and whatnot, and right in front of the camera, so everything is recorded. Plus, the dispatchers can almost look out the window and see that. Yes, sir.
The what also could happen there is when this will sound terrible, but I've had experience in Louisiana with parents.
Yeah. Oh, they come. They've been coming to our office forever.
That's awesome. That's
they've been doing that before the Safe Exchange Zone. You'll see them parked over in the grass. There'll be so many cars there sometimes. Grandparents, everybody exchanging children and things. And it is. It's a safe environment. Here's our a couple of our Explorers. They were registered. They're post 918, and they've actually been going to a lot of sporting events and doing the fingerprinting for the children. It's turned out it's going to be really great. Hopefully a good recruiting tool for us in the future. Our reserve deputy program as well. We've lost some people that have moved on. We've hired a couple folks, and we've done two meet and greets so far. We're going to do one more, and hopefully start another reserve program sometime the end of March. Our call volume went up for 19. You see in the blue there the calls for service. These are calls that come in that don't require an emergency response. It could be somebody in the lobby asking to see a magistrate. It could be somebody calling in asking about something that's civil in nature. Emergency calls stayed about the same. And we'll cover that a little bit more. Workload, the arrests have gone up, as you can see, in 19. Some traffic summons we have been writing a lot, and as you can see they've really since 15 I think it was 14 we ran out of tickets halfway through the year, and we had to order some more. But I'm telling you, I read every one of these tickets that come in, and they are some solid tickets. Most of them are 15 over the speed limit, and is out here on 15, we've got them 35, 40 miles over the speed limit. Yeah. Animal control calls, for some reason, went down this year a little bit, so we'll go with that. Civil process, we had a slight drop in civil process this year. We didn't have as many warrants coming in. We didn't have as many jury summons, and our levies went down significantly, and that shows you we have a good, strong economy. Here are talk a little bit about our investigative. I wanted to break that down this year to give y'all an idea of what we're doing. So we did have the homicide, home invasion investigation that kind of made some changes in that, which is fine and good. Sometimes it takes a while to decipher everything that's gone on, and that night the right call was made without a doubt. But after you get everybody together, you get all your evidence together, and you start working through things, and you get people to retell their story a few times, then you see who's kind of telling a little bit more of the truth than not. So that's why they call it investigations. We had a couple of arsons this year. We had 55 CPS cases that required screening, and investigators, including physical and sexual abuse, and nearly a dozen adult cases. 38 child sexual abuse material incidents, which it previously was called child pornography. We served approximately 75 warrants ranging from narcotics, administrative records, computer, mobile data devices, etc., either from our jurisdiction or we assisted others from outside our jurisdiction. I think we even had one with Naval Intelligence that helped with the case. So We work really well with everybody, and a lot of those came from outside of the county. Through our investigative division. We have one individual that I've spoken with you all about that has gone on and taken some extensive training. Well, he is doing so well that they have turned around and started rewarding him. They gave him over $30,000 worth of free equipment. He's got this supercomputer that's made of glass, and it's got its own cooling system, and the things he can do with that saves us 6-8 months waiting on something to come back from the crime lab when it gets done that week. Very, very impressive. Expanded role in the ICAT cases, which is Internet Crimes Against Children, and some of the child first forensic interview capabilities and training investigators. Last year, allowed us to send. We sent our first investigator to the forensic school. No one's ever gone to that. At the end of this month, we send the first investigator ever from Fluvanna to the arson school to learn about arson. So we'll be more independent. Next, please. Patrol division responded to approximately 18,144 calls for service. 5,307 of those required more than one unit to respond. We had 31 overdose calls. Used Naxanol to administer 5 times, saved 3 lives. What we don't have up there, I think we probably had, we've had 3 or 4 other incidents where we've been the first responders on scene and provided CPR that has helped save lives. We've had roughly 77 DUIs, for 40 emergency custody orders, TUVA, 28 temporary detention orders, 75 arrest transports. This is something you'll see another on another slide, but what's going to happen there is at our jail, where when we arrested somebody during the day and we had prisoners here, we could bring them over here and they would transport them back to the jail with the rest of the prisoners. They won't do that for us anymore, so our transports are going to go up significantly next year. We did four. Select patrols are when they mark into a section of the county and they say, I'm in this area and I'm going through the neighborhoods. That's called a select patrol. And about 1,100 reports were written last year. Here's your transport breakdown. 2019, it kind of went down a little bit, but next year it'll probably be over the 300 mark there. Mental health went down a little bit from 74 to, I think we had a total of 50 between people that were TDO'd that we didn't actually transport. And extradition stayed about the same. We didn't have to go too far to get anybody this year. That was great. Circuit court had a little bit down from last year, but you see general district, we've had more court time there, and the biggest one I knew we'd have the increase we talked about last year was juvenile domestic, and that's really for only 7 months statistics, so next year you'll see that even higher. Evidence, another thing that keeps growing and growing. We've got our outside exterior overflow storage that we're going to have up and running here shortly, but Commonwealth has been great working with us, and we've been everything that we can get rid of and destroy, we do. Here are indictments for last 3 years. Let's see a little bit of a 2017 was pretty busy, and here we are back in 19 starting to tick back up again. Here are some of those stats broken down. The drugs total about 27, possession of drugs 32, burglaries we had roughly 2, malicious woundings 10, weapons 8, sexual child sexual abuse materials 38, failure to appear is 2, child abuse 3, fraudulent sexual offenses 9, abductions 2, felony threats of bombing such 2, misdemeanors direct 17, total about 117 for those. Here are some statewide stats that I thought would be enlightening. From the Sheriff's Association, law enforcement calls for service, we had approximately 57,771 annually. And you can see down in the Sheriff's Office groups there about how many felony and misdemeanor arrests, which total of 57. Then you see the police departments throughout the state total about 205,000. State police arrested about 8,600 people. Other agencies, about 8,200, that'd be ABC and stuff. So sheriff's office are the second busiest. When you consider the numbers of the police departments, those are usually in your large metropolitan areas. So they would have a lot more. Sheriffs provide security in all courts, served more than 3 million civil processes throughout the state last year. The comp board noticed that said we were short about 115 positions. This year, the governor did create 29 new positions for court staffing, which we did ask for a position. And here's our little slide showing that last year we asked for 2 people. Y'all gave us the 1, and we're back to asking for that additional deputy this year. Turnover statewide in corrections is about almost 17%. Law enforcement about 13. Courts about 13. Total about 15. Almost 16% in turnover rates. Starting at salary for a deputy in some areas, mostly in Southwest Virginia, is only $33,475, and that's what the comm board gives us. State staffing standards. I think this was done in December. We were 254 deputies short in the state of Virginia. Jails were short 691, and court staff was down 115, for a total of 1,060 positions that are vacant throughout the state of Virginia. And this is where I want to talk to y'all a little bit about the reason of these shortages, and many of you can see the variables that play into this. In some areas of the country, thank God not here in Fluvanna County, we have a great deal of respect from our community, but as you see these things going on throughout the country, a lot of the younger people aren't getting into this profession because of what they see on TV. And also when they come in and you interview them and you tell them what their starting pay is, they look at you like you're crazy too. What has happened over the last 6 years, our starting salary has gone from one of the highest to one of the lowest in the region. So we started working on that this year and worked with HR, and I've created what's called a public safety pay plan, and I've presented that to HR, and we're working together to try to come up with a system to where we are competitive to other agencies our size. When our I'm not talking about the larger agencies around, I'm talking about like Orange, I'm talking about Madison, when Greene County and Nelson County have a $4,000 higher starting salary than we do, we have problems. We also have problems with compression and people getting into law enforcement. The things they ask, what are my benefits going to be? You get into public safety because of benefits. You want that steadfast knowledge that you and your family are going to have health insurance and those type of things. We don't get bonuses because our company does really well at the end of the year. And that's why we count on those things to attract people. We want a person to know in 10 or 12 years where their salary is going to be. Right now, it's not feasible under our current system. As well as most people are maxing out now, and they're not going 30 years in this career. They're leaving before that, and that is creating the shortages in law enforcement also. People are leaving, the stress level that's involved with this job. So we're having to become more competitive, and we currently are one position down. We can't find anybody, and it doesn't do us any good to hire them before July because they have to go to the academy. We have 3 people that are newly hired this year, and two are in school and one has to go to school. In the next 5 years, you have 9 people that can retire, 9 senior staff from this agency. If we don't start recruiting and getting qualified people in here to start taking slots. And I'm starting July 1, we got 2 people that can go. And if we don't start doing that, we're gonna be constantly behind. And we're gonna get to the point where we can't provide the services that we are providing right now. And right now, we're very overworked. I can tell you that. We're short a person in the courts. We need another investigator. And we need some more admin help. My admin staff is so stretched out that I don't hardly leave my desk throughout the week because I'm doing duties that a chief deputy should be doing. And I've been doing that for 5 of the 6 years I've been sheriff. We're growing, the county's growing, and we got to provide the services that they need, and we need to provide the best services possible. So we are going to have to get a little bit more competitive. We're don't know the exact figure we'll need to address some of these issues, but we'll work with Jessica, and we'll come up with a plan, and I'd like to be able to present that to y'all later. And that's not in my budget because it's really an unknown number. But over and above any kind of a pay raise that we get, we need to address these things. When you got people that are working here 10, so I got four, six people that have been here 17 years and aren't even at midpoint in the pay scale. So these people are suffering severely from compression. And it's not just us, it's throughout the state. I watched the senators the other day talking about a pay raise for the state police and how bad and how short they were. But it's an industry shortage, and everybody's going to be competing for people. We want to compete for qualified individuals to come here and provide the services we need in our community. So if you want to look at the budget, we had a really good budget session with the finance staff and the county administrator. I thought everything went really super.
So for the sheriff's budget, for in the current year, his budget is $3,372,427. The budget that I proposed was $3,319,849, and really the only thing that wasn't included from what he had in there was some a full-time salary position in there. So that's really the bulk of it. I mean, he went down in some areas, he went up in some areas, but overall, I mean, like I said, most departments and offices came forward with good realistic budgets. And if there was savings to be had from contractual things, I know in a couple of the sheriffs, or I don't know if it's the sheriff's budget or the E911 budget, they, you know, there was a contract that fell out, so there's some contractual savings by doing some new contracts. So it's, you know, the budget may be going down a little bit because of that. But the main thing for the sheriff's budget is the personnel.
Right.
So that's that.
And that's only 53,000 something for.
Let me go back.
It'll be more than that total because you got to add in benefits.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah. And if we're lucky, we'll land with the 29 that they've allotted for in this year's budget.
And then there are some dollars for implementing a chief deputy position, which is taking one of the current positions and then creating a new chief deputy position.
Right.
If you had a good session and Sheriff Hess just sort of went through the whole lack of personnel that he suffers from, why do we cut it?
Say that again?
If you had a good session and he just went through the whole lack of personnel,
I'll say at the time, from my standpoint, it was more for that there was a shortage of personnel as he has right now. So if you've got vacancies,
I think it was four down then.
Well, I mean, like I said, if you have vacancies, why add additional positions?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That sounds right. What we did with social services.
We were lucky to find the people we did.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know there's been a lot of back and forth between, you know, do we try and use dollars if I'm misquoting right. you know, do we use some of these dollars to put more money into the salaries for the existing staff that we have to keep them, or do you put money into new personnel?
Because with the newer people and the odds of attracting somebody that is certified is not very good. So we're going to have to, you're talking a whole year before that person is actually independent and out on their own being able to function. Mm-hmm. So if we get the new person, plus the one we're short, plus the one that's retired maybe too, we could have four or five people in the academy. So we'll be that short for that whole year until 2022 before we're back on our feet. And then as if we don't lose anybody else. So it's not like you hire them and they're in the car the next day and, right. you know, doing what they need to do. It takes a period of time
right.
for them to do that.
Hopefully what the board approved will slowly start to help in that. The board approved increasing the sign-on bonus for those LEO yeah. certified folks. I think you increased it from 3,000 to 5,000.
Yeah. You go by the prison, it's 4,500. You know, everybody in this profession is in serious.
So where do our people go when they leave us?
The two of the younger deputies that we had went to federal agencies.
Okay, they didn't go to another county.
Not to another county.
D.C.
No.
Yeah.
So yes, ma'am. It, And once somebody gets 3 years of service in, you're pretty independent, working independent, not having to be supervised a lot, and you're very marketable at 3 years. And if you can remember, Mr. Weaver came back when we would keep them 2 to 3 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, we were just a hiring and training facility.
So you require them to stay, what, 3 years now?
Well, if we bring them on with a signing bonus, there's a contract. But from the get-go, there's not a contract. Yes, sir. The quality of applicants aren't very good right now. When you have the city of Charlottesville right now has 15 police officers in the academy. They have 11 that are in there 1 year, and they're still minus 10 people.
Do you have a chart where you compare us with the counties around us?
Yes, ma'am.
So we could really see the impact?
We gave all that to HR as far as the starting salaries.
Okay.
And there are numerous sheriffs. We've been emailing each other. Mm-hmm. There's a big push throughout the state, even the new sheriff in Goochland. Their starting pay is $46,000, and he can't attract people that he wants to, and our starting salary is $37,000.
What's your average salary for all of them?
Most 10-year deputies, 45, 49.
Probably like 48, 49.
Yeah, somewhere in there. And some of those carry master deputy titles, but that's not a permanent thing. They have to redo that every year. They could lose it if they do something wrong, right? But it's and we hadn't even started on dispatch. That'll be next. But
does the board have any further questions on the sheriff's budget?
Would the idea be that with your baseline personnel budget and the lack of positions filled, that you would use some of those dollars to address the compression scale plans that you're working with? Is that what you're thinking?
I'm guessing, but it's gonna take at the minimum $80,000 to address starting salaries and compression. Mm-hmm. And then the one variable I haven't even spoke about is that the board, I would hope you would be concerned about, because last year you passed a measure to where when I don't run and or get unelected, whoever comes in makes $88,000, and mm-hmm. you're not going to attract a qualified mm-hmm. person running for sheriff for $88,000. And you know, that's unless it's somebody doing it just so they can say that that's who they are. But mm-hmm. to get a qualified person, I mean, you know, it's that's on down the road to worry about.
Yeah.
But
that's something we may look back at. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions or anything else on the budget?
For emergency communications, actually. Budget for the current year, $1,722,543, and I basically funded the baseline plus budget, which was the full request of $1,708,000. It went down a little bit, and really that was just contractual. And Michael Grandsass here, he can speak on that. But like I said, I funded that what his full request was.
Director Grandstaff does an amazing job. His mm-hmm. technology skills and expertise are just unbelievable, and when it comes to what he needs to make his department run, I never doubt him, because I know he does it well. You can take everything that I said about law enforcement a few moments ago, and you can add dispatch. The very same, every sheriff that's sending me, they want to know what our dispatchers being paid. Right now, we're currently two and a half short, and the last one to leave was go back to where he came from, because they offered him that much more money, because you know, and that's what, you know, some people look at that, you know, they don't look at the long term, and that's what I want to build on in this agency in dispatch and on the sheriff's side, is this is where you can be, and you can be in the community where you live and you raise your family and you're part of it. You know, that's where we can compete against larger places.
Does the SOL at the high school teach a course and Sheriff of Justice.
No, ma'am. Our Explorer program is going to be our way of trying to attract people into the criminal justice field and to get them started into college and try to get them to come in and work in dispatch. Because you master dispatch, which we've had 20-year law enforcement retired come in and say, well, I'm just going to make me some extra money. Well, they last about 3 weeks, and they say, I can't do all this. Mm-hmm. That is a challenging job. Yeah. I can tell you that. If you can't do five things at one time, you don't need to be in that room. Yeah. And when there's a major snowstorm and an incident going on, one of the command staff always walks into that room, and we're a part of that. And it's amazing how well they work together. It really is. But it takes that special person, and there again, we're competing for those folks. You know, when you can go up to the distribution center and make $20 an hour, which I think it was one of the applications, he wanted to come work for us, and we couldn't pay him what he was making up there in dispatch. So, you know, those are the challenges we had. The private sector is so strong. And why do you want to come work nights and holidays and weekends? So, but anyway, any questions on the budget for the dispatch? So that, you know, because part of the public safety pay plan will include dispatchers, and then in the future, as we grow, we have transition to full-time firefighters and full-time county rescue. Those can be fitted right into that same system, just like other agencies. And we kind of modeled ours after Orange. They were the latest agency to adopt a public safety pay scale.
So. Now, as you're working on a plan, it's a future plan, how far are you going to go out? Are you going to do a five-year plan?
For public safety?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. I'm gonna try to do it to where it continues grow itself.
Sure.
Even if I'm not here in 4 years,
right.
the next person can say, mm-hmm. Yeah, we have to keep doing this. We have to keep being competitive. And we, you know, really, when you sit down and you start doing the interviews with people, or people send in an application and the application itself is a mess,
mm-hmm.
You know, I wish they'd teach them how to do that in school a little bit, you know.
Yeah, that can
tell you. Yes, ma'am. So I'm sorry I've taken enough of everybody's time, but thank you.
Mr. Hazel.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Dahl, your staff, thank you so much for having us here. Mr. Dahl, thank you for all your staff for their assistance in putting these numbers together. It gets better every year. I would like to start by saying, Sheriff, we don't have to worry about replacing you for at least 7 years. You're not going anywhere. at least until I do. But I would, going back to the Sheriff's first presentation and the numbers and the increases and the number of indictments and arrests and things like that, if you look at those numbers and then add in the things we get from Lake Monticello, State Police, Jefferson Area Drug Enforcement Task Force has been making some cases here in Fluvanna, and the women's prison, which continues to send more and more cases to our court system, you get an idea what our office deals with. It's coming in from all directions, and when I started here 25 years ago as one day a week prosecutor with Kyle and Guy, we were in court 2 to 3 days a week, and if you were there past 2 o'clock, it was something, it was notable. and now we have court 5 days a week, and my assistant Todd or I or both are in court 5 days a week, which makes getting ready for the next day that much tougher, but we're keeping up with it. And if it wasn't for how well we get along with the sheriff's office and the courts, I don't know how we would do it, but we all get along great, from Mr. Grandstaff providing information for us right on down the line, and it's about the only way we can all stay as busy as we do and not be at each other's throats. But I would like, the only thing that I'm going to point out in my budget, because it stays the same basically throughout, is I do have, there is one note of explanation as to a change, and that is due to workload increase by body camera footage mandate. Patrick Wolf and Sarah Brown salaries have been increased by 3%, and that's funded from a $10,000 line that was approved last year for the body camera footage analysis. And I want to back up a little bit and explain how that came to be. Last year, the General Assembly, right at the end of budget time, got together with the Virginia Association of Commonwealth Attorneys and localities representatives, and they were trying to address what to do about body cameras and the increased workload that puts on Commonwealth Attorney's offices. And as General Assembly likes to do, they put that on the locality. They said for every one camera that a locality has, up to 75, the locality shall provide an additional Commonwealth attorney. And then from 75 to 150, another one. We have over 30 body-worn cameras in this county between the sheriff's office and Lake Monticello. All the lake officers wear them. So we were entitled to one fully funded Commonwealth attorney from the locality. I did not come to you and ask for that because, I don't ask for something I don't think we fully need. I waited for years before we got the paralegal in place, and thank goodness we have Patrick because he takes a load of drafting and things off of us. And I met with Steve and Eric, who was about to take over at that time, and we came up with a number of $10,000 instead of a fully funded prosecutor. The language was we either got a prosecutor or we had to come up with an alternate agreement with the locality. So we came up to the agreement of just $10,000. And that was in case I wanted to bring in a part-time person to look at this body camera footage and document it for us, because there was a mandate that we provide a report to the compensation board to document how much body camera footage we're getting in and looking at. I will tell you that in the 6 months since they started this, from August of last year to February 7th, we got in over 131 hours of body cam footage that we have to look at before our case. And that can be one camera on a traffic stop or some incidents. We have six different officers with body camera footage, so we have to look at all of that. The way that comes into our office is the sheriff's office, the body cams are on the person, they bring it in, they set it down on a base, and it downloads into a computer. The officer burns us a disc on a little DVD, CD-like thing, puts it in a little envelope, and they bring it over with the police reports every day. So it didn't make sense for me to hire somebody part-time to come in once or twice a week, because then we'd have a stack of them, and we're dealing with private things. A lot of these body cam footage have things on there that the public shouldn't see, and I trust the people in my office, but I don't know that I want somebody coming in for just a few hours a week. So for a couple reasons, that didn't make a lot of sense. So I started having Sarah and Patrick, do that as best they could in the time that they're working. What they have to do with that manila envelope is take that disc out and put it in the computer and have it open up. And it takes a while of clicking and worrying for it to finally open up. And finally, you click a few times and you get to a menu. And they have to click on each stream of video and make sure that it works, because a lot of times, just for whatever purpose, it won't open up. So they make sure that it works, and then they put a table of contents on the front of the envelope for Todd or I. So the way we have to look at the body camera footage is we have a break, sometimes over lunch, or we have an extra half hour. We go grab a file for a DUI that we've got coming up. We have 3, 4, 5 on Tuesdays, sometimes. And you put that in. Well, I don't have time to go through all that clicking and figure out which all these streams are. So that table of contents is absolutely necessary. So they take the time out of what they're already doing to get that done. So out of that $10,000, I asked Eric and his staff if we could recommend a 3% increase for the increase of duty that Patrick and Sarah are doing. And that, that's much less than the $10,000 that's allotted. But I just wanted it to come out of that, and I wanted to explain to you all what that was. So that's the only change in my budget, is that slight increase. And again, I would never hold you over a barrel, but the General Assembly gave me the opportunity to do that. But I didn't do that. But I do want to remind you, when Ms. Treadway starts talking about drug court, that there was a significant savings from us not doing that. So if there's any warmth in your heart for that, I wish that carries over to the next presentation. So I don't have any other really things to get into. Our budget, again, every line is identical except for that one little change. So if there's anything you want to ask, I'm happy to try to answer.
Yeah, and in his 20 budget, his current year budget, he's at $518,981, and he requested, and what I propose is $518,531. It's a very slight decrease.
I just love it when you put that word mandate in there.
don't forget the unfunded.
I get the warm fuzzies when I hear those words. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Treadway.
Thank you, board members, for having us here tonight. I appreciate that and the opportunity to present my budget as far as the clerk's office as well as the circuit court judge's budget. I put together a slideshow. I'm actually going to hurry through it because I'm throwing a lot of numbers out there to you just so you can kind of see where we're at. These are our revenues. Last year, our revenue was $790,000. This year it seems like we're projected to be above that as far as the revenues that we bring in. This is a breakdown of where those revenues come from. The farthest left is the compensation board reimbursement to the office as far as staffing. There's some miscellaneous state reimbursements. Then there's miscellaneous taxes. And it, instead of just listing, it's grantor tax, grantee tax, probate taxes, the taxes that my office collects for land recordings and estate recordings. And then fines and costs. Some of our fees come up from general district court. We share some of the fees, like law library fees. There's civil filing fees. So some of those come up from downstairs. And then business type activities as far as revenues, which is basically like lamination, copy fees, passport postage reimbursement. So that's what those are. And then the preservation grants that I get for preservation of our records. So that's basically what makes up our revenue. This is the expenses. Obviously, clerk personnel or the office personnel makes up the biggest part of it, and then our operational expenses. On the right-hand side is the judge's expenses, which the first one there is the judicial expenses, and then the operational expenses for the judge's budget. And this is our workloads. As you can look at it, it remains pretty steady. It's from 2014 to 2019. I think my figures somewhere here. Everything is maintained pretty much the same. We have an increase in probate. I think it's about 15% increase in probate. Fictitious names, I can tell you that's going to be a 100% decrease because as of January 1st, the General Assembly took that responsibility away from us, and now people have to file those with the State Corporation Commission. But as you can see, that is a very minimal thing that we were doing anyway. So they've maintained. Our passports have gone down, and the main reason for that is that one of the city offices has picked up doing passports. Waynesboro had stopped doing passports, or a place in Waynesboro had stopped doing them, so we had started seeing an influx of people from over the mountain coming here. But then Charlottesville, someone started doing them in Charlottesville, and so those people started going back, so it dropped down a little bit there. But everything's pretty much maintained. There was about 25% increase in criminal cases from 369 to 458. Civil actions went up a little over 100 cases. So the court stuff is going up. Everything else is kind of maintaining. As far as what we asked for, there is an increase, about $4,000 or a little bit less than $4,000 change and some change. Basically, I can tell you that $4,000, some of our line items went up, some went down. That $4,000 is our preservation fund, so the county is going to get 100% of that back. So it's that all of our preservation grants and stuff that I write, you get the money right back. So there's a line item for $15,000, but you're going to get $15,000 back. So that's the increase. Drug court, this moves on to the judge's budget. The judge's budget itself has pretty much remained the same except for one ask of $50,000 for a drug treatment court. We've been working for a little over a year now trying to implement and go through bringing a drug treatment court to Fluvanna County. So these fees are what make up that $50,000 that we're asking for. In order for us to start the drug court, we have to have a coordinator and somebody to basically oversee and case manage the people that are in the drug court. Our offices can't do it, so we have to have somebody in place. So this would be a part-time salary. Mileage expenses would be not only also helping try to provide some transportation for the participants themselves, but also mileage expenses for the individual who would have to drive from Charlottesville to here and that kind of stuff for case management. And then the operational supplies are lab fees, drug tests, and then other, like, you know, computer, those types of supplies. So the $50,000 is what we're asking for.
Why are we taking up this responsibility here on the drug court? Do we have to? It's voluntary, isn't it?
No, sir. I think we're all planning on jumping in again. I want to introduce Judge Moore, who's
Judge
here.
Moore, who's here.
We're talking about his budget, Judge Moore was kind enough to come out and show his support.
I'm glad to talk about mine.
I like how he's
The answer is no, you don't. And we did not plan on being here. We put in for a couple of grants that we hoped we would get, and we did not get. And the reason that we didn't is because in the grand scheme of things and how illogical some things are, the implementation grant, they require, or at least you're much more likely to get the grant once you've been up and running. They don't want to send money somewhere before you start and have it collapse and the money doesn't go anywhere. So once we get up and running, then they will, we feel very strongly that we will get that grant, which is 150 some thousand a year. So I'm looking right at you and telling you, we did not plan on asking for this, and I know how many times you've been told we're not coming back and asking next year, and then it just becomes a constant budget line. We do not plan on that happening. Right. That this is something we need as seed money to get us off the ground, to get us running, and I want to tell you that it is a savings to the jurisdiction, and yeah. Ross Carew from OAR is here, but the amount of days that people sit in jail where they could be in drug court, where we're paying, you're on the jail board, we're paying $91 a day. And I can give you the two people that I've already recommended to be in drug court. I started filling out the paperwork for them, and we are lucky. We dodged a bullet because these folks have charges also in the Richmond area. So they're being held in Richmond most of the time, if part of the time, if not most of the time. But one of them was arrested June 27th on Fluvanna charges. If we had had drug court up and running, she could have gone into drug court within 1 to 2 weeks. But she's still sitting in jail, has been back and forth to court, and is back. And when she comes back on April 24th, she'll have been in jail 242 days, or almost $22,000 at localities, not ours, thankfully, because she's in the Henrico jail right now. But if she, but a local person who keeps going back and forth on these drug charges that could be in drug court is eating up $100 a day of the county taxpayers' money that we're paying $91 a day. So if the sooner we get drug court up and we can get the 10 to 12 people we expect to be in there, that's going to break that cycle of coming to court, going back there for 90 days, going back there for 6 months, and we're paying for every bit of that. Not to mention the human cost, the human gain of putting families back together, getting those people back to work. The requirements that people have to do in drug court, they have to get treatment, they have to get a budget, they have to pay their court costs, they have to get a driver's license, they have to get job training and a job, and then they have to reunite, you know, with their, start doing family activities. So it is a big plus for the community, and I assure you, Mr. Weaver, I know how you feel about the budget, and I would never come in here and tell you this is a one-time ask, but this is, we need this money just to show the people that run that grant that we are up and running. And again, no grants are 100%, but that we feel very strongly that that grant will be here once they see that we've got people actually in trouble.
It will continue that grant, you feel, once?
They're all grants, so I think Ross can say, so it's a three-year cycle? It's a three-year cycle, but you can renew after every 3 years. So, it's, I think, $151,000-something per year. So that's, you know, again, this, We thought we were doing so well. We've had national training. All of our members, the sheriff and all the folks that are they're part of it, had national training. The national trainers were so impressed that the sheriff and Commonwealth's attorney and clerk were actually there, that it wasn't just, you know, stand-ins. I had to go to the Supreme Court and give a presentation because we have to be approved to have a drug court. And they were very impressed and just were so happy to give us a designation of drug court. So we're there, and we're ready to start.
Mr. Hayes, one thing, the coordinator, is that a county person, or is that
contractual to OAR?
I believe they'll be working under the auspices of OAR, but is that correct, Cross? Or we can work that out.
We need to work that out. It depends. I mean, I think OAR is willing to absorb some of the in-kind costs with it if the county wanted to contractually do it. It just depends on how we want to do it.
Now, we have a drug court in Charlottesville.
For 20 years.
Okay. Do you have statistics on their successes? I think it's important that we understand how that drug court functions.
Judge Moore? I can speak to that. I don't have the actual figures, but I actually was on the planning team as a prosecutor when they started in 1995. And the recidivism rate for people in drug court is better than the recidivism rate for people in jail or probation.
Right.
The cost is much less. I think it's somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000 per person per year, whereas jail is roughly $26,000 to $30,000 a year. And I think probation is probably 9 or 10. I don't really know exactly, but it's cheaper. But basically, it's not a program that's required by the state. There's a local benefit to it. So the leaders, the criminal justice leaders in Fluvanna can see the benefit of it. We've had one in Charlottesville, Albemarle, since 97. We began our planning in 95. We had an 18-month planning period, and that's pretty much what Fluvanna's done. It's using the criminal justice system to persuade to get people in treatment that would not otherwise, and get them in earlier. But it is a savings to the community, not just in jail costs, the probation costs, but it assists individuals to get off of drugs. It helps the community because they don't have somebody who's addicted or dependent, helps the community because it lowers these costs and creates contributing citizens, basically is what it is. But the recidivism rate is low, the cost is low, and it's not gonna help everybody. I mean, we know that going into it, but about 50% of the people that go into drug court successfully complete the program after a year, and I run into them all the time in town. I sit in Fluvanna one or two days a week, and I sit in Charlottesville 3 or 4 days a week. I wasn't the person who got this started, but I was delighted. You know, when Sheriff Hess and Mr. Hayes and Ms. Treadway, one or two other folks, Mr. Cruz, because I've done this since I was a prosecutor, and I've been doing it since I was a judge 5 years ago, but I've been here 4 years. And I just think it's a great thing for the community. It will help people, and it will help the community. And I'd be glad to answer any other questions, but that's
what I'm gonna dwell on.
Mr. Dahl, can you skip two slides?
Well, I was going to say, today, we got a thing out, one in our emails, the County Connections thing. Mm-hmm. And Senator Morrissey actually had a bill in to make this a mandatory thing, but he pulled it back just the other day. So,
it may have to be later on.
Well, but they're going to revisit it next year.
Mm-hmm. The one traditionally, if I can address that, traditionally, drug courts have only gone where the locality wants them. So the iffiness of Senator Morrissey's bill was you don't want to mandate somebody to do this if they really aren't ready for it.
Right.
But Culpeper, for the first time, is having a drug court now. And Green is exploring one. So up to now, Charlottesville and Albemarle has had a unified court. It's both Charlottesville and Albemarle. But Culpeper's already been approved, I believe, and Green is talking about it. But it really needs local support, and the locality needs to want it, or it's not going to work like it should.
Exactly. The long term, Mr. Weaver knows about our jail budget. They bill you by your days, and if we can cut those back significantly, that would save the county money.
Well, and this slide actually shows those costs. The total cost of Fluvanna inmates for 2018 was $1.6 million. The drug court possibly eligible inmates, it would have saved us about $486,000.
That's just a jail cost, because you have to look at social services costs.
Oh,
as well,
absolutely. Oh, yeah. This is just jail.
You send somebody to jail, and that family is disrupted. They're not earning an income any longer.
Right.
But so that impacts medical treatment they may need.
Sales tax locally
and your family costs through CSA.
So it's a no-brainer.
Millions.
I can tell you there's
a
I'm sorry, I can tell you there's large support for it in the community. I've gone and talked to a couple of larger churches about some help we might need, transportation and things, and people ask about it and they're interested in it. So it's something that I think would really be a benefit to the county, and I think it's a good time for it. I've been talking about it with judges for a long time before Judge Moore came, and we've always been worried about transportation because we're a rural county, and anybody with a drug conviction doesn't have a license, so that's always been an issue. But we're going to work with that. We'll take care of that.
But you brought up a good point when you talked about the, and it's not just one section of the community. It's not just one community. It's mm-hmm. the whole county. Yeah, they're affecting everyone.
Yep.
I spoke to Mr. Hazel about this, so Louisa County reached out wondering if there could be some type of regional approach to doing this too, and I had the county administrator there. He was going to go back and just check with his Commonwealth attorney to see where they are in the process, but I know Mr. Hazel can speak on this a little bit better.
Yeah, I talked to Rusty McGuire, the Commonwealth attorney over there, and yeah, their concern is time. I mean, they're having criminal cases on Saturdays regularly. So, the drug court is a different special docket it takes up. But I think I think there's certainly an appetite for it over there as well. But it takes a while. Like, as the judge said, it takes 18 months, 2 years of just planning. And you have to have a national group come in and train your group for 4 days. So it's not an overnight process. But I'm happy to work with them anyway. Hopefully probation is going to have a satellite office up in the Zions Crossroad area, which would certainly work well with them. That's probation's plan. So it makes sense if they would do that. But it's from the somebody having an idea to it actually becoming a reality is better plan on 2 years. The board
might take into consideration too. Like I said, so this was not included in my budget, and after seeing a lot of the information here, there's certainly a lot of evidence that supports why it probably should have been. But like I said, I didn't have this information prior. But the one thing the board can do, if Mr. Hazel and Ms. Treadway and Sheriff Hess and the judge, if they think it's something that, this is a one-time ask, the board could say, well, instead of baking it into the budget, the board could say, well, maybe we want to pull that out of either it's the current year BOS contingency, or maybe next year BOS contingency, or a little partial if they wanted to start it earlier or something like that, since it's if there's a strong indication that it's not going to be an ongoing cost, that's one other way to look at it too.
We keep on saying it's a cost, and it's not a cost, it's a saving.
Well, I know.
It's a cost up front. Savings in the long run, it's a cost up front. It's still a cost. To begin with,
if it saves us a couple million dollars in the long run,
it's
that's
a new expense. Yeah. It's a new expense in one budget.
Right. Yeah.
All righty. Is that it?
I think so. Unless you have
another thing I need to ask too. Blue Ridge Juvenile Center. Mm-hmm. How are our juveniles doing? Our children,
I'm on the board. I mean, as far as
we don't have a lot of kids. One time we had a lot of kids going.
It's been down significantly.
No, the last few years it's gone down.
I think that's one of the things that they talked about. Blue Ridge also clean up.
Right.
Help kids a little bit.
Maybe.
From
keep
maybe.
Well, there's out of school suspension.
It could be attendance when they make it 10 days.
There's been a change of focus from the state level, from DJ to Department of Juvenile Justice Services. They have closed up all but one of the big facilities, and they're trying to do things on a more local. They're trying to avoid sending kids to detention quite so quickly. So it's the numbers are I believe, way down statewide because the focus has been for the last few years has been to get those numbers down. So that's mine. I'm familiar with our DJJS representative, and I think that's been the trend. So,
all righty. Are there any other questions? Well, we do appreciate y'all coming out, and thank you for all the information that you've given us. We've got written down here for any budget discussion, but with Miss Eager gone, I don't know if we want to have budget discussion or any of that tonight until we have all of us here.
Probably
ought to have all of us here is what I'm thinking. How about y'all? Okay. Hearing that, and we have no closed meeting. So, before I say my magic words, I want to recognize, I see we got a couple more students in Coach Pace's class. Their watches, I'm going to write them a tardy referral, for, you know, they probably got lost because I was the one who gave them the record. But thank y'all for coming out tonight. I like it whenever we get kids to come out, or young people to come out.
Doing better.
And I think both of those are voters this year. They're seniors in Coach Pace's government class.
We'll probably see you later this year, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The one on this
side. I don't mean in court. I mean.
I'm not talking about court. I'm talking about graduation.
No. Coach Faith brings them over.
Tours
the building. Tours Palmyra. Yeah. We talk.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Of course, Mr. Hazel may see some of them in court, too.
And I wasn't saying that now. Y'all are putting words in my mouth. Anyway, we have a motion to adjourn.
So me.
Second. Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0, and Ms. Eager not here. Thank y'all for coming out, folks.